What is up, freaks? Welcome back to Tales from the Crypt. In this edition of Rabbit Hole Recap, I'm here on the roof with our boy Matt Odell. We've got helicopters flying above us right now.
They're on to us.
What was that?
I think they're on to
us. Oh, they're on to us, yeah. Yeah.
Did you see any ladders coming down?
Not yet. Not for this recording. Maybe in a future recording. It's a beautiful day we got here on the roof.
Gorgeous. Happy to be here, as usual.
Happy August. Happy August 1st to you. Oh, we don't have this on the list.
How did we not have this on the list already?
We knew we were forgetting something.
There you go.
So, yeah, it's August 1st. It's two-year anniversary, or some people want to call it an anniversary. Some people...
Bitcoin Independence Day.
Bitcoin Independence Day, when the user-activated soft fork was enabled. Is that technically what happened? What technically happened on August 1st?
Well, didn't everyone go with SegWit and then Bitcoin Cash happened?
Yeah, Bitcoin Cash forked off. Exactly.
Because, like, the SegWit 2x folks were like, oh, well, everyone will go along with it, and then we'll do the 2x part later on.
I think it was 90 days after.
Yeah, so it never actually... I mean, it kind of did happen, right? I mean...
We're here now. It's 2 years later. Some people call it the most important event in Bitcoin's history up to this point. Would you agree with that?
It's pretty crazy. It's been, one of the most important events, but yes, it's pretty crazy. It's been two fucking years. It feels like it's been a lot longer than that.
Yeah. No, it is. Does it feel like it's been longer?
Lightning was like but a dream 2 years ago on this day, right? Sure. Like, we needed SegWit for Lightning. There was no Lightning clients and there was no Lightning network. It didn't exist yet.
And yeah, now we have crazy proliferate. We actually had a lot of Lightning news on the docket for this episode in particular. But yeah, all enabled by SegWit and... users sticking up for themselves and sticking up for the network and not caving to the demands of what some would consider an economic majority. Not that they had the power anyway, but this proved without a shadow of a doubt that full node operators sort of dictate the rules in the system.
Well, you know, we kind of talked about it on...
July 4th.
And also on the podcast that we just released with Richard. You know, so many things in this world end up getting co-opted by centralized actors, right? And this was a very unique case where Bitcoin was able to not do that, you know, because of both activism from the stakeholders, but also because of how it's designed to be highly resistant to change in the first place.
Yeah. No, then a lot of people argue whether or not that event in particular sort of launched the crazy mania that we saw for the rest of 2017. In my opinion, was definitely a bullish event to prove Bitcoin's utility and overall its robustness and decentralization at that point in time.
Yeah, because you had that. You had the Bitcoin Cash fork, and then you had the SegWit 2x failure. Think about all the shit that's gone down in the last 2 years. That's what I'm saying. It doesn't feel like 2 years. And here we are, you know, just 2 years later, and people are already complaining that Lightning's moving too slowly, you know?
And that goes back to the statement I made a couple weeks ago when I was on that bachelor party. Like, it's quiet, too quiet. Like, I feel like things are too good almost. But yeah, we'll touch on a lot of that. Before we get into the topics of the day, we got to give a quick shout out to our sponsors, Cash App. They're letting you freak stack sats. They just rolled out a new UI. If you haven't checked it out yet, check it out. You can buy Bitcoin, send, receive Bitcoin on the app now, and they're rolling out BEC32 enabled sending and receiving, or I'm not sure about receiving, but you'll be able to send to a BEC32 address. It looks like soon that's being rolled out.
Yeah, I think receiving is not even a SegWit address right now.
Not positive. I think it's still a legacy address. I know mine is.
Yeah, I'm pretty
least.
Sure it's legacy.
But beyond that, they have the Boost program as well. I used my Boost card this morning at the coffee shop, saved myself $1. You get a Boost card, you go to merchants, like a local coffee shop, a Whole Foods, DoorDash, Taco Bell, they're adding others. And you shop at these merchants, you get money, and then you can stack sats with that. So use the promo code STACKINGSATS if you have not downloaded Cash App yet. That's Stacking Sats, one word. You're going to get $5, and then $5 is going to go to a very cool charity that's near and dear to our heart, Al's Lacrosse out of Chicago. So go download the Cash App today. Use Stacking Sats as the promo code. And we've got to give a shout-out to our other sponsor, Unchained Capital. You already know all about them. We mentioned Parker Lewis's Gradually Then Suddenly newsletter last week. What we did not mention is that he also dropped a link to his incredible paper, Ender's Game, which is on the Unchained site right now. But beyond Parker's writings, they also have the 203 multi-sig volt program. If you guys are looking for a third party to help with your custody. Unchained is there with their vault programs where you can use a Trezor or Ledger multi-hardware setup, and Unchained will be there to be a signing member if you ever need them to come sign a 2 or 3 multi-sig on top of that. They have their loan program on the other side. If you don't want to sell your Bitcoin and use it as collateral to get USD loans, you can do so on their loan side. So go to www.unchained-capital.com/vaults. Check out their vault program. And yeah, shout out to our sponsors. Matt, it's been like a good week in terms of a mix. It's a good mix of macro news we have lined up, a good mix of technical news, and a good mix of some other topical stuff in the Bitcoin world. So it's an interesting, far-ranging conversation we're about to have. Where do you think we should start?
Let's start with positive news. Jack Maulers announced that they're working on a full node completely integrated into Zap. You basically have Bitcoin Core in Zap already, so when you just launch that, it'll give you everything.
Yeah, it seems like Pierre's node launcher with a better UI on top of it.
Yeah, essentially just all wrapped into a single program, right?
Yeah.
So like you can imagine people running that, and then you could easily run Wasabi or, you know, Electrum personal server next to that and use it with like a cold card or something. So you'd have basically like 2 app install. That's pretty simple for what you get: a full Bitcoin node, a full Lightning node, and a way to interact with a hardware wallet.
Yeah, on top of that, they have the mobile app, so you can connect your node to your mobile app and monitor your node while you're on the go, and transact while you're on the go if you're using Lightning as well. So shout out to Zap, just putting out good shit week in and week out, it seems. This came out of nowhere. I wasn't expecting this. Was this like known on their roadmap? I feel like this was a bit of a surprise.
He kind of just teased it on Twitter, right?
Yeah.
It was a great surprise. I was really happy about that.
Yeah.
I think it'll make it a lot easier. We already love Zap, and I think it'll make it a lot easier for people to use it to its fullest, right?
Yeah, exactly. So shout out to the Zap team pushing that forward. And I guess it's a good segue into BitMEX. They put out a blog post this morning. Sticking on the Lightning Network here, they tested out watchtowers, and they did a nice write-up of basically them setting up a watchtower and proving that it caught a malicious transaction and what's the word I'm looking for? Punish the justice transaction. Yeah, a justice transaction.
Such a good term.
Was executed. So we'll link to that in the show notes. It's just a blog post explaining how they did it, how it worked, and they set up some pretty granular details in there. So it's a good way to see how this watchtower system works in the wild. Like we said, we saw Will Byrne demo this at BitDevs a couple months ago, and it works.
It's pretty cool to see it in person actually go down. And BitMEX Research does a lot of good write-ups like this. So,
yeah. That's one thing I'm going to talk about. BitMEX Research, they had to shut down their Ethereum node because it was getting too expensive.
And they had a bunch of them, right? That's the whole point. They had like their version of Fork Monitor where they run all the different Bitcoin clients.
Yes.
And I guess like no one was using it, and it just got really expensive to run. And then on a similar vein, did you see what Ryan X Charles posted? The BSV guy?
I muted that guy a while ago.
Our former hero at Reddit who then fell and became a villain.
He's not even a villain. He's just a dunce.
So it's actually really funny. Okay, so BCH split off like 2 years ago, right? On this day, and with the goal of making blocks bigger, right? And what the what Bitcoiner said was, you don't want to increase those block. If you increase the block size too much, the block weight. That's how we calculate it now, the block weight. But if you increase that size too much, it becomes prohibitively expensive to run a node because your bandwidth requirements keep going up and up and up, right? You have to send more data. And nodes don't get paid. So then, after holding up Craig Wright as their false idol for maybe 10 months or however long, they had a falling out with him. And that then we had the split up where you had SV then split off from Bitcoin Cash. So now you have two Bitcoin Cashes. SV was like, well, we have to go even bigger, right? Because it's like once you go, once you start increasing, how far do you go, right?
Once you send it, you got to full send.
Right. So they went even bigger. And now
2 gigabytes, right?
I don't even know. It's just big. It's just large. And they're putting like all this useless data on there because the fees are so low. Like most Bitcoin SV transactions are this weather service that's just decoding the weather into this blockchain. So Ryan Charles, who's a former Bitcoiner, then Bcasher, then Bcash SVer, runs the site Money Button, which is like one of their so-called premier projects in the space. And he just wrote a tell-all blog post where he's like, it's too expensive to run a node. Like, we need donations. Like, you don't understand. Like, we don't get paid to run a node. The blocks are too big. It's like, dude, are you fucking kidding me? And then not only that, the Bcashers are like, we warned you guys. We told you that it was going to be bad because the SV went bigger than them. You know, while they're doing the same, they're committing the same exact foul, and they just think like it's proving them right. So it's pretty hilarious development.
Poetic justice at the end of the day, right?
Oh, it's fucking hilarious. Yeah.
And let this be a reminder to you freaks out there. This is why me as an individual, this is why I choose to download Bitcoin Core, because I think the people working on that repository and code base have these trade-offs in mind, and it is, do not raise the block size at all costs. Let's do everything we can before that ultimatum is pushed on us, and try to be as efficient as possible in the time being. And I think Bitcoin up to this point has done an incredible job as that. And if you actually look at the annualized growth of the blockchain, or excuse me, the chain state, in terms of gigabytes, like the annualized growth has sort of, the slope is decreased, and it's growing at a lower percentage rate over time because of these efficiencies that have been gained via SegWit and bandwidth efficiencies and stuff like that.
Yeah, you want to keep it as efficient as possible. And what's really cool is what people don't realize is one of the benefits of these failed minority forks and of altcoins is that 2 years ago, 4 years ago, 5 years ago, when we were having these debates, it was all theoretical. And I mean, the safest decision is to side on the conservative side, right? But now these forks come out, they've done it in practice. And now we have like real use cases to point to where we're like, look, they did it. This is the issues with it. You can see it clearly creates centralization, you know, it becomes prohibitively expensive to run a node. You know, even something like Ethereum proves a lot of the debates that we've had over the years.
Yeah, and that's why it's important to try to seek out like the signal on all these scaling proposals. Like, just arbitrarily raising the block size is lazy and not a really obviously not a really clever way, a real clever way to try to solve this problem.
And comes with major trade-offs.
Exactly.
Right?
So that's why things like Erle, things like U3XO, like try to focus on those proposals that approach scaling in a clever way instead of just arbitrarily changing a variable in the code. So Erle will help a lot with bandwidth. U3XO could potentially help with the chain state size as well. So things like that, instead of just chatting the block size.
Yeah, and you don't want to make changes. You know, there's no, once you do it, the damage is done. So you want to be as conservative as possible. You can always make changes in the future if they become necessary.
Yes. Yeah, so that was talking development process and efficiency. A thing that I wrote about this morning and a hot topic in the news recently has been CoinJoins, and in particular CoinJoin implementations, whether it be Wasabi or Samurai. One that is not talked about as much, I feel, but has been around the longest and has a very unique way at facilitating coin joins is Join Market. And last week, Chris Belcher from Join Market sort of proposed the concept of a fidelity bonds on Join Market. There's too much coin join and join market going on here. So basically a fidelity bond would help to prevent Sybil attacks. So a Sybil attack can happen right now on the maker side of the maker taker market within join market. Basically, you can have one entity represent a bunch of inputs to sort of reduce the anonymity set of a coin join. And so Fidelity Bond would force makers to tie their Bitcoin up in a time lock contract for a certain period of time to sort of increase the price of the cost of attacking or executing a Sybil attack.
Yeah, join market was the first one of these three implementations. I remember when it came out, I was like super excited about it. The cool difference here is that it runs on a maker-taker model, similar to a lot of exchanges. So basically, if you have a lot of funds that are available to be mixed, you're the maker, and you get paid Bitcoin to facilitate those mixes. Now, the issue with altcoin, so that's different than something like Wasabi, where you're paying Wasabi's coordinator money, or something like Samurai, where you're paying Samurai's coordinator money, but the two people involved in the transaction aren't getting paid for it. So with join market, it's kind of nice because it creates this free market incentive that really is similar to Bitcoin in a lot of ways, where it aligns incentives to add liquidity to the network. The biggest issue with join market has been UX. It's a lot more difficult for the average user to use. And then the other thing is, with all these coin join implementations, we have the issue of Sybil attacks, which is basically, just imagine if an attacker just tries to participate in as many coin join rounds as possible. And the way most of them get around it is by introducing this fee, right? Whether it's a Samurai fee or the Wasabi fee, and that's it puts a cost to the attack, right? Which is similar to like Bitcoin transaction fees. Like if you try to flood the network, you have to do this cost. But with join market, you don't have that. It's a reverse incentive, right? Because the maker is getting paid to do it, so you could get paid to do Sybil attacks. So this is a very clever way to try and get around that.
Yeah. No, and it puts a cost on the Sybil attack. And then on top of that, it creates a sort of natural incentive for long-term holders to participate in these Fidelity bond sales and purchases because an increased anonymity set makes Bitcoin more fungible, which therefore makes it more useful, gives it more utility, which therefore drives demand for it and the price higher. So if you're a long-term holder with a financial incentive, to me it just seems natural that buying and contributing to this Fidelity bond model sort of makes sense in the long term.
I mean, I think if you're a long-term holder, like participating in providing coin join liquidity in general already, like I imagine most makers in join market system were already long-term holders, right? It's just this added mechanism works well for them because, as you said, they're already long-term holders, so they'll be comfortable time-locking some Bitcoin to prove that they're a responsible actor, basically.
Yeah. No, and another thing about Fidelity bonds, like while we're on the topic, I just thought it was a pretty unique implementation of op check lock time verify, which is basically the time lock function, an op code that allows you to lock your UTXOs up for a certain amount of block time.
Did he say how long he wants to lock them up for? It's just a rough...
I bet there will be a market. Like, I assume there will be a market for it.
The longer you lock it up, maybe more credit you have?
Yeah, the more...
And the more you lock up, and
yeah,
the longer...
Yeah, so it's like a quasi-reputation system, too. Like, you're trusting the people who own these bonds and have for a certain duration of time, I would imagine.
It's pretty clever.
Yeah.
You know, I would love to see joint market usage go up. I do think the main issue is UX.
Right, yeah. So if you are participating in this Fidelity bond system, you have to be careful with your UTXOs before and after you use it. So you have to make sure they're well mixed before you purchase a Fidelity bond or lock your UTXOs up in a Fidelity bond. And then once that bond duration has been met, you have to be careful with what you do after. You have to remix it and stuff like that.
Yeah, because they're linked to your CoinJoin identity.
Yeah, so if you fuck up after the fact, you could fuck up anybody who participated in a coin join with you. So that, yeah, like these UX problems exist, and I said it in the bent today, like it's, a novice is not going to be cognizant of this or savvy enough to do this, I don't think.
I got to jump back into join market and try it out again.
But this also brought up, like, hopefully in the future, things like P2EP, like pay to endpoint, will be more commonplace and makes it easier again for the developers and then the end user as well. It's just like every transaction as a coin join and a pay to endpoint, but there are trade-offs there as well.
Yeah, because both parties need to be online to do that.
Yeah. So that's why I like seeing things like Zap make it easier.
Yeah, I mean, you could still do stuff like the Stonewall transactions in Samurai, where you're like simulating a coin join amongst your own outputs.
Yeah.
You know? So at least it kind of looks, at least it looks like a coin join. Capital One breach.
Capital One breach.
Capital One lost how many accounts did they lose?
106 million, I think, all in.
Oh my god!
Potentially more, mostly in the U.S. Canada was affected as well. Yeah. So apparently, the story goes, there was an engineer at Amazon. She found this breach within Capital One system on Amazon servers, and then moved the data that she secured from this breach to a personal GitHub account, and was pretty, pretty lazy with her trail of information.
She, like, no OPSEC.
Yeah, no
OPSEC
at all.
And I think she might possibly she didn't actually sell the data, right? She just leaked it, yeah. And then someone else sold it.
Yeah.
And then the worst part is Capital One didn't even realize that they were, that it was compromised for like a year or something.
Yeah, some GitHub user found it and alerted them, I'm pretty sure, and said, hey, I hope you know this breach is out on GitHub right now.
The craziest part, we were literally talking, I mean, we talk about it all the time, so I guess it's not that coincidental, and these things happen all the time, but we were talking with Richard the day before this breach happened about how, like, will people care about their privacy, and, like, I'm an ardent believer that as more and more of our information is online and more of these hacks happen, people will wake up. You know, look, we have Equifax was trending that they're giving everyone the $125 blood money, which did you claim your Equifax money?
I tried to.
Really?
I'm not eligible.
Why aren't you eligible?
Apparently my information did not get leaked in it.
Every adult American's information got leaked, I thought.
Maybe I did it wrong.
I don't know. I didn't claim because I felt like it was a slap in the face and I didn't want the money.
You could have stacked sass with it.
I could have.
Yeah.
Yeah, so we had the Equifax thing trending. Now we have the Capital One. And it's getting to the point where, like, all this information that people think, like, what is private, what private information do people have anymore? You know, addresses, phone numbers, email addresses, social security numbers, like, nothing is sacred and it's all out there. And if we don't stop giving these companies information, like, it'll never get solved. Like, there's no way, they can't secure it. There'll always be, whether they intentionally leak it to governments or for their own ad purposes or if they get hacked, it is all just a ticking time bomb waiting to, you know, get released, any information you give them.
But Matt, we need to save people's lives. We need to collect this information to protect people from themselves and, more importantly, terrorists around the world. Is there a threshold of KYC that is acceptable?
It is not effective at stopping bad people, and it just puts good people in jeopardy. So it's an absolute net bad. It should just be, the thing is, KYC is necessary for a lot of things in the legacy financial system just because of how they handle fraud. Like, their fraud systems aren't effective without it.
Yeah,
but with Bitcoin, we don't need that.
Because it's a push system, right?
Yeah, because it's a push system, and it's, you know, a digital bearer asset that they can verify themselves. So it doesn't really matter what the identity is.
It's a very extremely good point. Like, Bitcoin as a push system versus the credit and debit system and ACH system, which is pull. Pushing your UTXOs out is a completely different model than the way our traditional financial system works right now. But going back to KYC AML's protection against terrorists and the fear used to protect these, what we would argue, dangerous policies, it is a game of changing the dialogue and the narrative around this. Like, we have to change the connotation. Like, we're not trying to, that's why I love the Richard conversation. Like, the current financial system is surveillance tech as a service, sort of changing the conversation around that. Like, this isn't here to protect us. It actually pretty empirically does more harm than good.
Yeah. I mean, it'd be like if like every person got mugshots taken because some criminals exist or something, right? Like that's ridiculous. You just mugshot the criminals. Like you don't just, you don't jeopardize everyone else's like privacy and freedom and security. I mean, imagine all this Capital One information got leaked, and also it leaked all of your Bitcoin addresses and your transactions and your balances and shit. Like that gets really, really dicey really, really quick. And it's fucking dangerous. And no Bitcoin companies have, you know, that are just straight Bitcoin only businesses have no excuse to be doing KYC. If they're doing KYC, they're fucked. Someone like a service that's not doing KYC is going to be successful.
No, I would agree. So Capital One breach, another in a long line of data breaches that are affecting hundreds of millions of people, 106 million people in this one breach. And then Capital One tried to come out and say, like, we didn't leak anybody's social security numbers except for like 800,000 accounts.
Or no, wasn't it bank accounts? Like they were like, we only 100,000 bank accounts got leaked. No, which is like such a weird way of putting it.
So be aware. Just be aware of these breaches. Be aware how much information you have out there.
Let me see what the...
And then, I guess this is a good segue into Liquid Tether, because this sort of enables these Bitcoin-only businesses, and it actually helps them transact more privately as well.
And why does Tether... The reason Tether is the most successful stablecoin by far is because it doesn't require KYC, while all the other ones are regulated businesses, and while not requiring full KYC yet, they will have to, and funds are subject to freezing at any point.
Exactly. So, for you freaks who are unaware, Tether has been launched on the Liquid sidechain. You can now... the exchanges within the Federation, and I assume individual users as well, can use Tether on the Liquid sidechain. And where this really gets interesting, and the debate it sort of sparks, is Liquid Tether in particular going to be the vehicle through which exchanges and traders start moving funds between exchanges, because of the advantages afforded on the Liquid sidechain, like confidential transactions and
you
the
can't
speed.
See balances.
Yes.
It's super fast and you can't see balances.
What are your thoughts? Do you think this seems like a good hypothesis?
I think that makes sense, right? Because it's like what our buddy Nick said. He's like, if you're a big trader, why would you want your funds show up on whale calls, right? Like the Twitter account that just says when there's big, large fund movements.
Yeah, exactly. That's going to be annoying as hell. Like, oh, 300,000 followers of Whale Call. I don't know how many followers they have. Just saw that I moved millions of dollars.
It should be interesting, though, because, I mean, Tether this whole time has always been a fuck you to governments around the world. So this move does make it more private. It should be interesting to see. I mean, I don't know how they could get more pressure on them. They already have so much pressure, but...
No, but even on top of that, couple that with Liquid, which has... a lot of people question whether or not it'll find a product market fit. It seems like maybe this Tether use case in particular may be the first killer app on the Liquid sidechain, if you will.
I think the advantages are you get like the so-called benefits of something like Ripple while being actually less centralized than Ripple and easily with very little friction move between Bitcoin and that chain. I think we'll see like many different experiments in this regard where you have different layers with different trade-offs, all very different trade-offs. So the user gets to choose what they want to do. And in this case, I see like a pretty clear value prop for basically moving Bitcoin and like tokenized USD like across between exchanges. The real question is in my mind, with all these things, is it going to be, is there going to be legal battles here? Because we know who the Federation is, right? So there's people you can go after. You can go after Blockstream if you wanted to.
Yeah, but is the Federation spread out geographically?
Across yeah.
Yeah, across jurisdictions, so that's a little bit of cover.
Yeah, and you need like 9 of 16 or something to do anything.
Yeah. No, yeah, but again, this utility continues to expand, the optionality continues to expand, and this is something definitely to keep your eye on, whether or not Tether on Liquid gets a lot of demand. We suspect that it may drive a lot of demand.
Yeah, and as always with Tether, just remember, like, not your keys, not your coins. Tether requires a trusted third party. That trusted third party is actively breaking U.S. laws and laws around the world. So at any point, that shit could be worth zero. Yeah.
Yeah.
Bitcoin is my stable coin.
What should we move to next? Talk about product launches. Fold app. They just launched their kickbacks. Canal.
Sats back.
Sats back, baby. So you use the Fold app, basically shop at their partner merchants.
With Lightning.
With Lightning, and you're getting sats back.
They automatically convert it to fiat, and then they give you up to 20% back in the form of Bitcoin.
Yeah.
Which is a nice little incentive. I mean, I've always said that users will start... The two biggest hurdles of users spending Bitcoin is, I think... or I guess three, is if the merchant converts to fiat anyway, you're like less ideologically motivated. So really what you want is like small merchants that accept Bitcoin directly because they want KYC free Bitcoin and they give you a discount and they hodl. The other thing is, so you want discounts, like if you're going to spend it, you need a discount. And then the third thing is the tax, the way it's handled tax wise is just completely ridiculous and burdensome. So like, who wants to keep track of all those little purchases? You might as well just spend in fiat and accumulate Bitcoin until they like figure that out, right?
Yeah, and this actually reminded me of a good piece from Alex Gladstein that I read this week, and he sort of laid out a vision of Lightning progression through the into the future, and in a few years hopefully Bitcoin adoption continues to pick up and people do need to use it as a medium of exchange, and they do that via the Lightning Network, and merchants start accepting Bitcoin via the Lightning Network, it might be a market-driven choice because the fees compared to payment processors, credit card and credit card processors and Master and Visa card are considerably less than the Lightning Network, at least at this point.
Yeah, one of the guys on the BTC Pay team, Pavel Nex, had an interesting tweet, which it was on a similar tangent of a couple of my thought processes I've had in my own head. And I thought it's a really cool concept, a really good idea. Basically, you have a BTC Pay merchant. Let's say it's it's a shop owner. He owns a cafe. He accepts Bitcoin through BTC Pay in store, runs his own full node. He offers a discount because he wants more KYC free Bitcoin. He's trying to stack as many sats as possible. So he offers a little discount. User comes in, pays him in Bitcoin. Now he's got a stash of Bitcoin that he's accumulating there. He could then operate as a point of sale, for Bitcoin and, do small purchases. So the users could come in and pay him cash. Customers can come in and pay him cash and get paid Bitcoin. He's like a decentralized Bitcoin ATM. And that way he has fiat access for some of his Bitcoin without having to be connected to any kind of like fiat off ramp or anything.
That's fucking beautiful.
Right. That would be a really nice closed loop. And there's a lot of good incentives at play there. I think for both the store owner to shill it and for the customer to want to use it.
So maybe that's who we have to reach out to is our bodega owner, our local bodega owners here.
Yeah, I mean, I think once we get just like a super simple BTC Pay like point of sale system in place, like we're very close. It's such a young project, you know.
It's crazy.
You could just tell them to like plug it in.
And yeah, so if you're actually, this is actually a good segue into. I saw. It's a open source project. It's run by volunteers basically at this point, and they take donations. And I saw last month they raised 0.11 Bitcoin, which is nothing.
It's 11 million sats.
11 million sats. But for a project that's producing so much.
Please consider donating.
Yes. Yeah, consider donating to them. We should probably set aside some funds of the TFTC. Maybe we'll send some try to figure out a way to immediately send some of the Dimebag sets.
I've donated to them a couple of times.
I have as well.
But yeah, maybe we'll do like some kind of... I like the idea of fundraise drives too.
Yeah.
I mean, they just did a really successful one for tour. They just need to do one for themselves. We could do one for them.
Maybe we could do that with the merch too.
They're just so humble that they're better at raising money for other projects than for themselves. They did a great one for Hobomot. They did a great one for tour.
Shout out to the BTC Pay server team again. Yeah, and then while we're on the topic of like Sats back and stuff like that, I probably should mention Lolly. There was obviously some hoopla earlier in the week, probably incited by me in particular.
Yeah.
I wish I would have worded that tweet differently.
I don't know. We were pretty tame about it, all things considered. It was like, it was kind of fucked up, you know, seeing that on Twitter, just seeing. And it wasn't just the fact that it was that they put the trademark. So they put the trademark next to Stacking Sats, trademark symbol, and they put it next to Sats back. But it wasn't just that, right? It was like the description of Stacking Sats is like earning Sats through Lolly. Like it was like some kind of Lolly specific thing, marketing campaign or whatever. While really it's like, I mean, millions of us have been stacking Sats for years. We just didn't call it that. It was a fucking lifestyle. Like you're frugal, you're just trying to accumulate Bitcoin, you know, and trying to accumulate as much Bitcoin as possible while being frugal and not overextend yourself. It's like it's so much more than just a way to earn for any specific company or anything like that.
Yes. Yes.
It's like trademarking buying Bitcoin or HODL or something.
Yes. And we should be clear that Lolly has no intention of using this trademark to profit.
Right. They said it was defensive. They pulled it from the site after the controversy. So
yeah,
that was good. They made a mistake and they fixed it.
Yeah. We're still huge fans of Lolly here. And yeah, so I don't think they're trying to use the Stacking Sats trademark to profit at all.
I don't think like if a company wanted to send out cease or desist or whatever, like they wouldn't be able to defend a Stacking Sats trademark, I don't think. Yeah. So that's that. You know, I don't love trademarks. I don't think we should be trademarking memes. So much more than that. And regardless of what any company does, we're going to keep saying it. We're going to keep doing it, keep living it. So,
yeah, it does bring up an interesting debate, though. It's like, is defensive IP purchasing okay?
You know, this is part of the reason why I like having my fiat job still, is because, like, we're just Bitcoiners, you know? We don't have any ulterior motives here except to, like, have more educated Bitcoiners and you know, to pump the price of Bitcoin. But there's always been, in the history of Bitcoin, there's a reason. Bitcoiners respond quickly and swiftly and a little bit aggressive, but in a loving way, because we've had so many people and companies that have appeared as good actors and then have completely eroded away that trust and tried to fuck us, right? So I don't think Lolly is one of those companies. But I think that is also a very positive display, because it showed other companies, you know, there's a bunch of companies that have been, they've had their eye on Stacking Sats, right, trying to wrestle it for themselves. And I think, like, it tells you that at the end of the day, if any of these companies try and co-opt movements that are big to Bitcoiners, like, it will be a net negative to their business anyway. So there's really no incentive to try and monetize it.
Yes.
Exclusively.
Yes.
If everyone can, everyone's welcome to monetize the shit out of it, right? But it's not an exclusive thing.
Yeah. It's a lifestyle.
It's a lifestyle. Goddamn right.
Shout out to Lolly. Still a great service.
Yeah, Lolly's going to take us to the moon, man.
I use them to buy my flights to Dallas.
That's pretty awesome. I forgot to do that, but my lady just bought some tickets, and she intentionally used Priceline, I think, right? Which is the...
They have cheapo air. I think they have Priceline, too.
Yeah, she like went out of her way to use Priceline to get Lolly. I just think that we like live in this like debt-driven society, and people spend way too much money. So it's like the ultimate Bitcoin weapon is to like weaponize that
savings.
Spending, like weaponize that spending to pump up the price of Bitcoin. Like that's what it's doing, right? It's like you're doing frivolous consumer spending that's like this debt-driven society has led us to, and instead it accumulates Bitcoin and pumps the price up, creates all this upward pressure. Like that's badass.
So use Lolli if you're shopping online, freaks.
I'm waiting for the day that the Lolli rewards are greater than the mining rewards, and then we'll have truly pumptasticness.
Wow, I've never even thought of that.
That would be awesome, right? Just constant upward pressure just from debt-driven spending.
Yeah, always trying to expand the Lolli Pump Guild. So if you know anyone who wants to join the guild, tell them to download the extension. Hong Kong blowing up right now. We got China on the border with their army, military. It's rumored. I've only seen rumors on Twitter. I have not seen pictures to confirm or anything like that. But rumors are that the Chinese military is on the border of Hong Kong. Protests are still raging on. Protesters are getting very clever and very, very good at deterring tear gas, cameras and other stuff. The police in Hong Kong are getting increasingly physical as well. So it's
getting really aggressive on both sides.
Yeah. Yeah. No, and the protesters are fighting back as well physically.
Do you see those lasers?
Yeah.
So they were like shooting the lasers to blind the cameras and the people, I think.
Mm-hmm.
The protesters were, right? Like,
yes.
Super high powered lasers.
Yeah. To mess up the facial recognition. And then the cops were doing it back, but not with lasers, with flashlights. They were, like, flashing their lights on and off at people recording them.
That makes sense. That's a normal procedure.
Yeah. And
it's fucked up, man. And I think they're clamping down. I've noticed the live streams have gotten less and less. I'm not sure if, like, anyone can live stream out right now.
And you're saying AirDrop's being used a lot?
Yeah, they're using Apple's AirDrop, which is, like, kind of like a faux mesh, right? Have you used AirDrop before?
I have an Apple device. Yeah.
It uses Wi-Fi and Bluetooth, right?
Mm-hmm.
And what, you can like set yourself to discoverable so some random stranger can just zap you stuff, right?
Yeah, somebody at Bitcoin 2019 was AirDropping memes to people that had their AirDrop open.
I mean, you should not have your AirDrop open at a Bitcoin conference. That's probably a pretty bad idea. So be aware, freaks. But yeah, so like people are AirDropping... This reporter was on his way on a train out of Hong Kong into mainland China, and he got airdropped a bunch of stuff from like someone that was just like in the station. So they're using AirDrop to pass along information and photos and stuff like that, which I thought was pretty novel and interesting.
Yeah. But it's not looking good.
No, I mean, it seems very much like a... Yeah, I mean, I don't know. How does China just, like, let it go? They're not going to ever let it go, right? And they're just going to get worse.
Yeah.
But it's important to fight, you know?
Is it like a Franz Ferdinand moment, though?
You have to fight. I mean, it's interesting.
Is that something like that, like a black, like, China basically denying Hong Kong its autonomy? I don't think that has that played into... The game theory of the geopolitics up until the last 6 months?
I mean, I think that it's interesting that all this stuff is being filmed now and being aired, and people can see these protests relatively live and in HD. They create this knock-on effect, right? Where, like, people around the world are seeing it, and China,
it's a check,
people are
right?
seeing it. Like, look, there was, like, didn't Russia have, like, the biggest protests they've ever had?
Yeah.
Recently?
Yeah, because the Putin's party or whatever basically arrested the opposition party or...
The head guy, like, the head opposition leader, didn't he get, like, a food allergy or, like, a so-called, like, quote-unquote food allergy?
Yeah, something
like
shady.
They poisoned him or something? But like you have to imagine that these people around the world are watching each other's protests, right? And they're getting inspiration. I mean, I'm inspired as fuck by what's going down in Hong Kong. Like we said, like the cards are stacked against them and they don't care. They're going to fight and they're not going to make it easy for China. And that's fucking admirable.
it's extremely admirable. No, and it is extremely inspiring too. But like we've said the last few weeks, I'm not hopeful. I'm not. I mean, I do hope. I am holding out hope, but I am not very hopeful that China's not going to come down with an iron fist. And what is the implications of that if they do?
And it really,
I'm just throwing out a theoretical there. I'm not even asking.
It really does highlight the when the citizens aren't allowed to be armed, like how much of a change it makes, right?
Mm-hmm.
Like people say, you know, like it's always like the straw man, like, oh, like what is your rifle going to do against a tank or something? But like one rifle at these protests would fucking, it would just throw everything up in the air. Everything would be completely different.
Yeah, somebody started shooting at the triads and like fighting those guys back a couple weeks ago. What would that have looked like? I don't know. And we're not trying to incite violence either.
Please. Yeah.
It's such a weird, fucked up world we live in. This is the situation we've been handed, though. We will keep paying attention to it. It is escalating pretty quickly.
Bitcoin is a global escape hatch. If I was in Hong Kong, I would only keep my money in real money, not in Hong Kong dollars. Fortnite World Cup.
Onto more interesting topics.
We are in the future, freaks. We are in the future. That was fucking... That was something else. 18,000 people in Arthur Ashe Stadium, the tennis stadium where they do the U.S. Open. 200 contestants, 100 in singles, 100 in doubles. Youngest were 13. They didn't let anyone in younger than 13. That was their age limit. And the oldest were 24. And there was only two 24-year-old guys, so all youngsters.
This is a young man's game, it seems. So we're talking about Fortnite had their annual... Is it an annual championship now?
It's the first one ever.
First one ever.
Yeah. It's insane.
13-year-old from right outside of Philadelphia won $3
million. 16-year-old.
16-year-old.
Booga.
Excuse me, 16-year-old.
He fucking dominated.
You watched some of this, didn't you?
He won the single. Yeah, dude, it's fucking cool. I don't know. I never watched esports or anything, but I knew it was on. I turned it on. You can watch it. You know, Fortnite, what's really interesting with Fortnite is they control the whole vertical. You know, their app is available on every single platform from like iPhone to Xbox to computer, and it's free, and they operate on this freemium model, right, where you like buy these skins that are just completely aesthetic and don't do anything for skill, and people just spend, you know, millions of dollars on this shit. But they control the streaming, everything, the tournament. It wasn't on a channel. It was like streamed through their apps, right? Live in HD. They don't have to pay NBC, a cut or whatever. They don't need to. They control the whole ad experience, everything.
No, it's insane.
From a business perspective, that's pretty crazy.
And so people were throwing charts out after this tournament, whatever you want to call it, tournament and
World Cup.
There we go. Like money spent. Or hours spent on gaming and money spent on gaming is skyrocketing compared to video and audio. Like video and audio are becoming like a blip on the radar. We're missing out, dude. We need to get a Twitch account.
We're too old already.
I know.
We're too old, but
how crazy is that?
We'll get a young gun and bring him into TFTC, and it'll be our
age range. 16-year-old won.
Fortnite god.
A 13-year-old came in second, right?
Or third? No. So what was really cool is they had $30 million in prizes, right? And to qualify, all qualifiers were online. So you could be any kid in the world, and you could do the qualifiers. Top 100 in doubles, top 100 in singles qualified, and they got paid $50,000 just for getting in, flown to New York, right? So they needed to get money to be able to go to New York and compete in this shit. And then this kid, an Argentinian kid who was 13 years old, came in fifth place, brought home $900,000.
Well, that's what it was. And this was hilarious because an Argentinian tweeted out on Twitter, like, wait till that kid goes home and has to pay, like, the conversion taxes and then the capital gains taxes. He's going to become a Bitcoin fan real quick.
I mean, even the American kid has to, right? He's going to have to pay big taxes.
Yeah.
I mean, the problem with the Argentinian kid is, like, now he's, like, a bigger target, right? Because he's, like, a rich kid in Argentina as opposed to being a rich kid in Philly. But, I mean, Bitcoin doesn't solve that, even though I see a future where all the prizes are paid out in sats. The Argentinian government knows who this kid is, would know that he just made $900,000 worth of Bitcoin, right? And they would be like, well, where's our due? Like,
well, Matthew, I thought you would be more imaginative than this. Like, imagine a world where this does not happen at a central location, and it's in VR, right. And everybody's a
NIMS.
Pseudonym, and it's automatic payouts in Bitcoin. Like, that seems...
Well, yeah, but then you have, like, latency issues and stuff. I don't know, so I'm not sure.
I don't mean, like, streaming payments, like, tournament payments.
No, yeah, there's a reason they have all 100 in the same place for the finals is because everyone's twitching around with their hands, right? And if you have, like, the little bit of internet latency, then that could have issues. But they did all the qualifiers through that, so, yeah, absolutely, there'll be those as well, and I think that'll be really cool.
That's a very good point. We need to get fiber across the world.
Yeah, I mean, we'll get there eventually. I think what's also really cool is that these kids all operate under NIMS. Already, right? Like, the winner was Booga, you know? Like, so that's cool. They live in, like, a digital world, and exactly. Like, Bitcoin is if you want to do, you can't do the anonymous tournaments without Bitcoin. Let's put it that way, right?
Yeah.
Like, to do it this way, they did KYC on all the contestants.
I wouldn't be surprised if there's underground Bitcoin tournaments already. How do we get the gamers into Bitcoin? I feel like that's what we need to do.
Might be some sites. I think I remember looking into it, and there were some sites that, like, you played Counter-Strike, and there was, like, Bitcoin betting on the side or whatever. But, like, really, that's what I said is so cool about Fortnite is that they have this vertical integration. Like, you want it to be nice and seamless, right? Like, in the interface. You don't want to go to a separate site and make bets.
Right. Maybe that's who we need to reach out to, is the creators of Fortnite.
Well, they have their own shitcoin. They have the V-Bucks.
But it's like an overt...
Yeah, I mean, you can just use it to buy aesthetic items. Yeah, and there's no conversion back.
It doesn't have a float, does it?
No float.
Yeah.
Nah.
Last topic. Well, actually, sticking on gaming, it's pretty cool. It's pretty crazy to see how big it is, and young people are going to fucking rule the world. Like, people were tweeting... Like, I'm going to be 36. My wife's going to leave me for a 21-year-old who's selling skins online and stuff like that.
Like, there's, like, probably, like, poor families around the world that are, like, telling their kids, like, they had some spare money on the side. They just bought them some kind of gaming computer, and they were like, you're going to dig this family out of this hole by the time you're 16. Or, like, imagine, like, in high school, is, like does, like, the varsity QB
costs.
Now, like, is he... a robe lower than the guys who are playing Fortnite or whatever and they're good at it?
Whew. Yeah. Are those dynamics going to change? Because these kids are winning money young. It's not like when we were in high school and the software development, quote-unquote, nerds weren't making money while we were in high school and wound up making a lot once we got into the professional world. Now they can make money in high school and be like, fuck you, I don't care if you could throw a spiral.
Yeah, and I feel like you're way more likely to become, like, an esports champion than... It's, like, way more in reach than becoming, like, one of the 32 best QBs.
It's a very good point. The world is changing fast. That's old dogs. Are we going to be able to learn new tricks? Are we going to be gaming pretty intensely our whole lives?
What, humans?
I mean, like our generation. Are we going to have to, like, get back into gaming?
No, I mean, our generation. I mean, I enjoy playing games, like, but we're never going to be able to play them competitively again. You know, like, you have to be. I bet you there would have been 12-year-olds in this tournament if they didn't restrict them from being in it.
Well, that was drone racing. Like, the lead drone racer of the world is a 12-year-old girl. Remember that?
That's pretty badass.
Yeah.
I didn't know that.
From Cambodia, I'm pretty sure.
I want when the drone racing will get good when they start, like, I want the, like, we can't have, for ethical reasons, we can't have gladiator fights and stuff. But, like, as far as drone stuff goes, there should be lots of explosions and...
You never watched Robo Wars?
Yeah, but that wasn't, like, they didn't take it, it wasn't big enough, you know? Like, I want to see, like, flying drone races where, like, they're shooting at each other.
I'm not even positive that's what that show was called.
What, Robo Wars?
Is that what it was called?
I think that's what it was called, yeah.
Dope show.
But it was short. It left short. You know, there wasn't enough destruction. And, like, the tech kind of wasn't there yet either, right? But I want to see explosions and shit.
It's true.
That'd be cool. Then the other thing I would say is, like...
Are robots people, too?
What?
Are robots people, too?
No, robots aren't people. I think it'll be interesting... They're definitely not people, Marty. I think it should be interesting. Like, do we hit a point with VR where it gets so good that, like, people only stay in VR, right? Like, that could be an issue.
Definitely. VR's like, for as much hype as VR's had in the last 5 to 10 years, it's been all hump and no Red Rocket. Like, I haven't seen like a mainstream VR app yet.
Yeah, I think we just like hit the point where like at some point it'll be easy enough and like immersive enough. Like, there's a threshold there where it feels better than real life, right? And we're pretty far from that threshold, but it should be able, just like air conditioning is dope, like it should be like relatively easy to manufacture some kind of like pod system where like you like go to a place and you like you get in a pod and it's just
Do we want that?
No, that's what I'm saying. We probably don't, because the incentives would be that everyone would just try and get to the point where they could afford a pod and then just check out.
Is that the the picture of Mark Zuckerberg walking down the aisle as everybody in the presentation wears the Oculus VR? That's a precursor to a future that may come where you have his smirking ass being like, these idiots are all living in a world that I created. And they're not even enjoying the real world. I'm on my private beach out here.
Now, if you were in that situation, though, it'd be really important to have a digital bearer asset that you could bring with you into that other world.
This is a very good point.
So enter Bitcoin.
Yes. You don't need a shitcoin for that either. The last topic we have here, I just want to put this argument to rest. Roy Sebag, the founder of Gold Money and Mene. Roy Sebag, excuse me.
It's so disappointing. I kind of liked Mene.
So explain Mene. Mene is a cool service, actually.
Well, Gold Money is a service where you basically, they hold gold for you, and then you can send it to other Gold Money users through their platform or whatever. And then Mene is like an add-on to that as a separate company where you can buy gold jewelry that's 24 karat gold, and it's weighed out, and their premium is 20%. Just a straight 20% premium on the cost of the underlying gold. And at any point, you can trade it back. So it's like a jewelry monetary item where you can, there's like, it's liquid because they just promise to always buy it back from you at whatever the market price is, plus their VIG. I forget what the VIG is. I think the buyback VIG is like 15% or something.
Shit. 15?
Yeah. I think maybe it's 10%. But it's 20% in the beginning. When you first purchase it, there's a 20% margin, and then there's a cost when you return it, if you return it. It was a pretty cool service, and they accepted Bitcoin.
It's probably to disincentivize people from trying to trade them.
Yeah, you know, but also it's because, like, there is a cost for them, right? Like, they have to, you know, melt it down or do whatever they want to do with it. And as it has designs and stuff. But it's, like, pretty cool because you could do, like, a chain. And then, like, they have like little 1 gram blocks. Like, you can put as many 1 gram blocks on. I don't know. It's like it's a kind of cool concept, like jewelry as a monetary item.
Yeah.
And they accept Bitcoin, but this guy, it's like Peter Schiff. You know, Peter Schiff accepts Bitcoin, but this guy's a gold bug, and he can't grok the trusted third parties.
Yeah. So the argument in particular we want to point out here from Roy, he tweeted out last week that he thinks Bitcoin developers are extremely smart, but they're extremely frustrating because they should be trying to figure out a way to digitize physical gold and create a monetary system that way. And
tokenize gold.
Basically, BitGold, which existed from 1997 to 2006, I believe.
And I think there's a couple that exist now that are like basically Tether, but with gold.
Yes, and so let's just put this concept to rest. Bitcoin exists because you cannot do this because of gold's physical nature. Like,
and you can't do it without a trusted third party.
Exactly. And trusted third party, as we all know, are security holes. And gold in particular, it's been proven throughout time. You get Executive Order 6102 from 1933 when FDR confiscated gold from people and made people turn gold in. It is physical. They can take it from you. If it's centralized in bank vaults, the government can go to those bank vaults and take it from them. They will have the power at the end of the day.
The company could be committing fraud and not have all the gold.
That as well as layers and layers of third-party risks that come with this. And that is why Bitcoin in its non-physical form needs to exist, I would argue.
Yeah, because you need something to pay the miners without a trusted third party.
Yes, you need that token. And it is more divisible, more portable. It's a lot harder for the government to go one by one to individual Bitcoin users. Number one, prove they own Bitcoin, and then two, extract all of their Bitcoin if they do find out they have Bitcoin.
And there's no way Roy doesn't realize this, right? It's like,
how do you not realize this?
I think they realize. They just, yeah.
Incentives.
Yeah, they just choose not to.
Sunk cost of capital and reputation clinging to a system that may not be possible to attain.
Well, I mean, if you ask Peter Schiff, he says that's why you have auditors and, you know, the legal system and all this and all the reputation systems and stuff
Bitcoin
like that.
Bitcoin takes all that overhead cost and turns it into math.
Exactly. It makes it way cheaper.
Yeah.
You can verify your transactions yourself.
Yeah. So we just wanted to end it on that. Roy, I think you'll be looked upon better in history if you just concede that this is a better system when it comes to being unconfiscatable and more secure and more decentralized and actually more pure.
Yeah, and his businesses accept Bitcoin, so he's kind of proving the point.
Always keep that in mind. All right. Exactly an hour and almost 1 minute in. Got anything you want to end it on here?
It's a beautiful day here. Hope you have a great weekend, freaks. Same to you, Marty.
You as well.
Stay humble, stack sets.
Peace and love, freaks.